You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Thirteen minutes after 9 o'clock on this Monday, President's Day. Joining me is the gunner himself, Michael Musselman. And Gunner's got kind of some cool stuff to talk about. What do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about the special guest we're going to have, or would you like to talk about? Okay, first of all, this is how crazy right life is. I get like 6 text messages before 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, "What's going on here, man?" What is this, a cry for help? I know he got his Botox shots, but come on, man. He never texts as much before 7 o'clock.
So. Yeah, it was a lot. I got the phone call this morning from him. He was pretty excited. He was like, "Wow, dude, you can't believe what just happened."
So tell everybody, let's talk about what happened over the weekend. When did this happen?
Yeah, so they went down, they were doing a leadership thing, so all the police departments. So here in Texas, all the law enforcement is governed by the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement, TCO. And so they set the standard. They do all the training, so everybody gets the same stuff. You know, so in the state of Texas, everybody's on the same sheet of music as far as law enforcement goes. So he goes down there, and he's going through this course. And at the end of the course, one of the things they have to do is they have to do a presentation on whatever they want. So one of the guys, he's gone through some pretty traumatic stuff from another agency here in Texas. Not the same agency as my buddy. And they, he's doing all this stuff and he's getting ready for his class. My buddy looks over his notes and goes, "Hey, you know, I got this. I listened to the show and, I got these things called the 8 commandments, 2 goals, you know, dealing with this kind of stuff. Why don't you look it over?" So he gives it to him. And the guy comes back to him. He's like, "Holy crap, this is, you know, like, this is like revolutionary stuff." You know, so he incorporates it in his class. He gives his presentation, and all these other officers are kind of like, "Wow, that's, dude, where'd you get this?" And he's like, "Oh, I got it from this guy." And then they go to a buddy, Sean, and they're like, "Where'd you get this?" And they're like, "I got it from these guys." And so they pass out all their information, and, you know, they all say the same thing. Like, this is on point. This is, we can understand this. This makes sense. And a lot of these guys have gone to other types of treatment and, but they really, you know, they really got behind it. And so they gave out phone numbers and stuff. And so he said, expect some phone calls from these guys because they're really interested in it. And then, you know, still got to get together. And like I told him, my buddy here and up where I live, I said, you know, your agency's got to get on this and be the point for this. And he's like, yeah, I got it. And so, you know, it was just really cool. Like, you know, they were doing this presentation and they all connected to it. And, you know, like they said, they thought this was just freaking groundbreaking.
It's cool stuff, though. It's cool stuff. Do you want to talk about... Do you want to talk about who's coming on or what?
Yeah, so I don't know when it's going to be aired because you got to do some editing on it, right?
Yeah, not much. You know, we don't edit a whole lot, you know.
Yeah. So,
normally, it's just a conversation. So,
good buddy of mine, Bob Woodruff. So, you know, if you haven't heard of him, then you don't listen to the news either. But a good buddy of mine, we met in 2003 during the March Up. He was embedded with us. And so I basically had to keep him alive and keep him from doing stupid stuff. We first met, it was just kind of this, and then we got to be really good friends. And, you know, we allowed him access to a lot of things, gave him a lot of insight on how to approach things. So he stayed with us during the March Up, and then he actually had to leave. David Bloom had died, and they were best friends. And so his wife, Megan, wanted Bob to be at the funeral, so Bob left country and was there for his friend, as you know, and his family. And so we stayed in touch. And then 2006, when we came back over, you were at the regiment, because that was when Larry Nicholson, the regiment. And so I got contact. Well, first of all, my wife, Tina, had talked to Lee, his wife, and said, you know, Bob's going back to Baghdad. He wants to get with Mike while he's there and get reconnect, you know, good story. And, you know, and so I didn't know about this stuff at first. And then I got wind of it through, I think it was the division PAO who's kind of upset. She came to me and she was like, what's going on? How did you invite Bob Woodruff down here? And I'm like, whoa, what are you talking about? She said, well, Bob Woodruff's coming to, you know, to you, to talk to you and, you know, and do all this stuff. You need to go through our office. I'm like, I didn't know anything about it, you know. So I don't know what you're talking about. So I was expecting, you know, so he was going to come in back into Iraq. Last time he was there was 2003, and he was going to link up. Well, DOD had linked him up with some Iraqi unit to do some story up in Baghdad first, and then he was going to come to me. Well, he was with that Iraqi unit. Him and his cameraman were getting ready to do this thing, and they're on this convoy. He got hit by an IED. Pretty strong one, pretty big one. Bob got severely injured. He almost died. C-17 flight to Landstuhl, and then back to Bethesda, and went through all these operations. And he suffered a traumatic brain injury where, and I'll let Bob describe the thing, but, you know, he had shrapnel to the actual brain. And, you know, you look at in his book, he's got a picture of his three-dimensional CAT scan that shows all the fragmentation and the dirt and rocks. And basically, I mean, removed, you know, destroyed a part of his brain, and was in the hospital for quite some time, had some great doctors, and then seven months later, he was back on the air, which is, you know, if you look at it, it's a testament to his resolve, his resiliency, and not only him, but his wife, Lee, who was instrumental in a lot of things.
Well, you know, I read about
her. She's that perfect person where in Bob's life, she's not only his spouse, but his best friend, because she doesn't allow, you know, she knows what Bob's capable of and doesn't.
Well, you know, when you read his bio, right, he's second all time in scoring in lacrosse at Colgate University. Now, that is no, lacrosse is a legit sport, and played on the East Coast, right, in the Ivy League, they have some of the better teams in the nation. He's second in career scoring in that sport, which is hockey played on grass, essentially. And it's no joke. What I didn't know, I thought he was a media guy, and he's a lawyer.
No, he started out as the lawyer.
And he's working bankruptcy law in Beijing when the Tiananmen Square thing happens, and then he gets hired.
And then they do a lockdown. They do a lockdown in the country, and he has connections, and he starts reporting on what's going on in Tiananmen Square, and that's where, you know, he fell in love with the media.
Wow, that's a crazy story. You know, how you know, it's something that he, in his life, it doesn't really, not on his radar, and all of a sudden, not only does it change the trajectory of his life, but ultimately takes him to places like Iraq and other places around the world. Because for years and years, I want to say, he reported from the East. I mean, you'd see Bob Woodruff, and it would be China, Japan, it would be covering the eastern part of the world, so it'll be interesting. But so we're going to get a chance to talk to him about his career and life. And, I mean, the great foundation that his foundation does, right?
Yeah, his foundation deals with veterans with traumatic brain injury and does great things. Yeah, fantastic. Thanks.
So that's exciting. And Mike, you've talked to him about, you know, what we've been doing relative to post traumatic winning, and give everybody a thumbnail.
Yeah, he's really excited about this. He thinks this is you know, he listens to the show, he subscribes, he downloads the podcast, listens to the podcast, you know, on his way home. But yeah, he's, you know, this is something that, you know, it affects him. He gets it, you know. And Bob, again, here's a guy who's really, he's outside the tribe, but he has his own special way of how he dealt with it and how he got through it. But he understands it.
He likes Sebastian Younger, right? While they may be outside the tribe, they are as close as you can get to it because they've shared and they've walked in the same footsteps. The only thing they didn't do is join and go through the training, you know, that others go through. But they are accepted, right, in the tribe because of the work they do and the impact that they've had, because the things that they saw moved them. And they earn incredible respect from us because the courage and selflessness that we talk about that so moves us, moves them.
Right.
And yep. So you can't get around that. So that's pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty exciting. All right, tell me about the weekend. You finally got your garage straightened out.
Oh my God, that was a task. And so yeah, I got the garage straightened up. Then I moved inside and I did the front room. Yeah, the front room, the reading room, the quiet room. It's got a walk-in closet and it has a bunch of stuff that I store in there. And so I cleaned that out, filled like a whole box of stuff to get rid of. And then we were out in the yard doing the yard work stuff, preparing for the spring, doing the edging and then cleaning up leaves and shit and pulling weeds. So yeah, that took up a lot of the weekend. It took the dog out to the park, long walk. He's chasing squirrels.
Nice. Dogs like that.
Oh yeah. He loves chasing squirrels.
And you have a big dog. So, I mean, do you have to get that dog big exercise to keep him healthy?
Yeah, he exercises. We run him a lot. You know, and it's funny because he is a big dog. He's 110-pound German Shepherd. But he's just the kindest, most gentle dog you've ever run. And it's hilarious to me because people that come in contact with him are always, you know, like people that are, I don't know, not dog-friendly. They always think like he's a big ferocious animal.
He looks like, the part. He could.
Oh yeah, he definitely looks the part. I mean, he's one of the dogs that always walking the dog. You would think twice about approaching her. You know, he's that kind of dog.
Yeah, interesting. No, you know, but it is part of keeping. But it's hard, I think, with big dogs because you do got to let them get out and physically get going. And that's kind of it can be a pain because, you know, to let them run off the leash and whatnot is not the easiest thing to do. And could you don't have dog parks down there, do you, that you can take them to?
Oh, yeah. Fence?
Oh, you do?
Yep. Yeah. But we got a lot of land, too. There's a lot of running places you can run. So, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity for him to run. I mean, we live on a golf course, right, for Christ's sakes. So when people aren't golfing, he's out running around.
All right. What else is going on? What else is on your mind? Anything? I just had a really interesting conversation with Alex Hollings about truth and watching this whole thing play out in Chicago.
Oh, the McCabe.
Well, and that too. On one hand, Andrew McCabe, and then the other thing, this thing in Chicago. But it's like these things, as you and I have talked about, I mean, the truth doesn't matter anymore. You know, the thing that happened to those high school kids from Kentucky, that was a complete setup.
Yeah. But again, the nail on the head, man. I mean, how do you function? How do you work in a place where the truth doesn't matter anymore? It's the it's who fabricates it, and, you know, that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, I just, to me, it's the most concerning thing about the country when the truth doesn't matter anymore. You know, you can you can be on either side you want to be politically and whatnot, but you know what? There should be some kind of fidelity to being able to talk about the truth, especially from our media. And it seems like the media is as political as our political parties are. That and again, I think the thing Alex and I were talking about was, look at this stuff in Virginia. You have the governor who is either in a Ku Klux Klan outfit or in blackface, and he doesn't really know which one, or he's not admitting. And so, but there's not nearly the hue and cry that
right.
you know, that surrounded the last nominee to the United States Supreme Court on allegations that were never substantiated.
Right. Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, it was hysteria. Hysteria. Nothing even close to that.
Right.
So the truth, you know, what side you are, you know, matters. So
well, you know, I hear politicians all the time say, you know, never have we been so more divided in this country. And it's not, we're not divided on race and creed and religion. We're divided on political affiliation. That's what really drives the separation. That's the real wedge. So it's who you believe politically, and that's where you fall in line with. That's the biggest piece. Don't worry about race. We can fix race if we can fix up political affiliations and just stop hating and working together and understanding that we're all in this together. You know, first of all, we're all Americans. You know, we all have vested interests. This country should do well together. Once we get through that, then everything else will fall in line. But I hate when they blame race. Oh, we've never been so divided. You know, this and that. Cops are dying because people, you know, it's political division that's really killing us. But no one wants to talk about that because we're not talking to adults. If we were talking to adults, yeah, this would be an easy subject to get through. But there's not any adults at the table. And if there are, they're not talking.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't tell you how much it bothers. It's so bothersome when you have major news organizations in the country, like the Washington Post, like the New York Times, having to retract stuff they've reported. Now, again, you're supposed to have two sources, but again, that all those rules seem to go out the window in our haste to be first, and you know, you got to drive the clicks to your place, and all the rest of this stuff, and it's just. How do you do the right thing if you can't start from if people that are supposedly reporting the news report stuff that isn't true and portray it in a very inflammatory way as this is the truth, and you're like, oh, maybe not. I don't know. So and again, there's huge examples in the country.
Yeah, I just don't understand it.
Right. There's an article in Stars and Stripes.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Army Sergeant James Snow has carried an M4 carbine and an M110 sniper rifle as an infantry on missions. With the M4, he knew he was capable of hitting a target accurately up to 300 meters. With a sniper rifle, he had less maneuverability and spent lots of time breaking down and reassembling the larger weapon to carry. Last month, Snow was given the opportunity to try out the Army's new squad-designated marksman rifle, or SDM-TAC-R. After a couple days handling the new weapon, he said it felt like something that could fill the needs of both his previous weapons. It had more mobility and close combat capabilities like the M4, but also better precision at distance like the M110. Tell us about the M110. I'm looking at a picture of it.
M110 is a gas gun. It's a 308 gas gun, meaning it's an AR platform. It's the Knights Armament. Who made that at first? It's just a scoped automatic rifle. It looks like a big M16. I'm not to bag on them, but you know, I hate when they just go with one person's point of view. You know, this guy says this and. Okay. You know, it's the problem comes out to is there a requirement? What is the requirement? And it's how we write the requirement. You know, if you do it well, you get good products. If you do it because of special interests and shit like that, that's where we get shit.
All right, let me, here's an email. Who makes this rifle for the Army?
Which one?
The SDM TAC-R.
The, what is it called?
The Squad Designated Mark.
SDMR.
Heckler and H&K make it. Whoa!
Oh, so it's probably the 416 then. Or the 417.
What? How hilarious. So I'm looking at a picture, and relatively a little bit similar. Again, I haven't obviously seen it or fired it, but I'm looking at pictures of it. Doesn't look too dissimilar.
I'm looking at it.
Right?
It is. Oh, that's the IAR. That's the Marine Corps IAR. Yeah, that's the Marine Corps IAR. Yep. No, so that's not the... Okay, so... I'm looking at two pictures now. So the first one I'm looking at, that's the 417, which is the 416 is the 556. The 417 is the 308. And so the British British Special Forces Group did a test on weapons, and they did it for sniper gas guns. And the one that beat everybody, even bolt guns, hands down, was the HK-417D. And so that's what they bought. So they use a HK-417. So if you type up HK-417, you'll see the same rifle.
Funny. It's too funny to, you know, the Marine Corps caught so much grief.
Full circle.
Right. All right, let's compare them. M4 7 pounds. The SDMR is 10 pounds. Length, M4 33 inches, SDMR 36 inches. Range, M4 up to 500 meters. Would you agree with that?
No.
What would you say?
I would say about 350.
Okay. The SDMR out to 800 meters.
Yeah, that is fair.
Okay. Caliber 5.56 times 45. SDMR 7.62 times 51.
Yeah.
Firing mode, semi-automatic, burst. SDMR, semi-automatic. Standard magazine, 30. And either 10 or 20 for the SDMR.
Yeah.
That's interesting. A lot of people will look at that. A lot of people will look at that and say, how could that be better? How could a smaller round, a smaller magazine be better?
It's reliability. Once you do 30, that's a big spring. That's 30 is problematic when it comes to 308s, 7.62s. So,
okay, Mike.
You don't need 30.
Okay, all right, let me ask you a question. Is the IAR, is that 5.56 or 7.62?
5.56.
Okay, but theirs is 7.62.
Yep. Yeah, that's the 417 that they're using. It's the same gun, but it's just a different caliber.
Okay.
Yeah, same gun. I'm looking at pictures. But, and again, it comes down to when you put 30 rounds of 308 in a magazine, that's a big magazine. And you don't really need it in that role when you're doing well-placed shots.
How big, man, a 30-round magazine of 7.62, that's gigantor, yes?
Yeah, did you look at it?
No, I mean, when you look at the bar, right, you look at the magazine that goes into the bar, just if you think of that as just for frame of reference, that's 7.62 magazine. and that's a big magazine, and I think that was only a 10-round magazine.
Yeah, well, because it's so long. I mean, when you put those extra 10 rounds in there, that's a long. I mean, a 20-rounder is 308 is a pretty substantial magazine. 30-round magazine, 7.62, that's a long magazine. And then again, it comes down to reliability. They have feeding problems when they get that big. That's a lot of compression on that spring. Those 10 rounds.
Is there any? Talk to me about the structure. If it's essentially looks like the same weapon. It's essentially. But you have a 7.62 round. That's a lot more stress on everything. Harder to put into that container.
Just the weight. Yeah, it's the bullet weighs more. 20 rounds of So what is the weight of a 7.62 bullet?
I don't know. You tell me.
Weight of a 7.62 bullet. So it weighs 7.62 by 51 NATO. Overall, let's see, we got what? They don't give weight? Why don't they give weight? Oh, cartridge weight. Oh, they're giving it in grains. So 25.4 grams, the whole cartridge, vice 11 grams for a 220.556. So more than twice. So if you were to do... So when you're talking about a magazine and you're doing a 30 rounder, 762 grams. And so into pounds or into ounces, that's 26 ounces. That's a lot of weight, man, to be carrying around. Yeah, no, I don't want to carry that. I don't think anybody else would. Yeah, that's a lot. Nope, I'm not signing up for that.
So talk to me about the weight trade-off. So in this permutation, if you want this kind of hybrid weapon that can be collapsible, it can still reach out. It's gonna obviously be scoped. And when we talk about the difference between, the 5.56 round, the 7.62 round, in terms of penetration, where do you sit in all of that, Mike? Is it better?
No, it's better than what they have, but no, it's not.
Where would you say the optimum round is in that trade-off for penetrating power, and which we've talked about here in terms of all the different variables that go into that, in terms of weight that you have to carry, in terms of just ammunition is heavy, right? You put on 6 magazine pouch and you throw 3 magazines in each one of them, and they're all fully loaded. That's a lot of weight. And so where do you shake out in terms of the caliber of the next round that gets developed?
So if you're looking at comparable size cartridges that can shoot far, and maintain that, you step into really the 6.5 family, the 6.5 millimeter family.
Right.
So 308 is 7 millimeters, 7.62. And so 260, 264 is 6.5. So if you're looking at comparable, but you can retain the more same velocity, same everything, and muzzle velocity and stuff, you'd start looking at the 260 cartridges. The 264 Winchester Magnum, that's the big one of the family. And then all the way down to the 6.5 Grendel, which is the small end of the family, which is not where you want to be. That's kind of like an AK bullet, short, fat, stubby. So in size comparison, so you have the 6.5 Grendel, you have the 6.5 Creedmoor, which everybody knows about, and then the 260 Remington, which is a bigger cartridge than that. And then you start going up to the 6.5 Kakano, the 6.5 Swedish. You know, those are bigger. But I say you still look in the 260 Remington, which they already have. Like, I think some of the special operation guys shoot 260 Remington. Very successful bullet. I mean, people that come to me and want a medium range cartridge, I always tell them to go with the 260 Remington, without a doubt. 260 Remington, roughly around 200 or 120 grains, 100, you know, up to about 140 grains. You know, the 308 is 175 to 168. But the range and everything else and the velocities that you get are better with the 6.5. And then if you go into the big Magnum cartridges, you know, your 338 LaPool or your 300 Win Mag, it's always the best way to go. Because that penetration and that velocity that it hits, that muzzle energy is pretty fucking crazy, man. So, I mean, but again, your 6.5s, your 260 Remingtons, you're talking about 200, averaging about 2,800 feet per second. Pretty good.
Here's an email. Mac, I'm curious, when Mike talks about these weapons and sees this stuff, what does he think that is most exciting about this? So, yeah.
The platform, not the bullet, the platform. Okay. You know, that they're going away from traditional bolt guns. You know, that was one thing that we did. We did a test with the FBI when I was there. We took a LaRue OBR, which is the optimized battle rifle, his 7.62 bolt gas gun, against an M40, which is a bolt gun, 7.62 bolt gun. M40 is, everybody knows, it's a widely known, very accurate sniper rifle, but it's a bolt gun. And so when we were doing shot comparisons, shots over ranges, at different ranges, all the way up to 1,000, the gas gun, Mark's gas gun, was holding, you know, so when we talk about group size, I try and put it in the perspective of the M40 with the same guy would shoot dime size groups. So you could take a dime over three rounds and they'd be touching that dime. That's a pretty small group.
Right.
The 7.62 was shooting quarter size groups. Okay. Quarter size groups. So when you do a size comparison to a quarter to a dime, that's good enough. I mean, we're not shooting bee's hearts out, you know. Yeah. You're not taking a medulla shot on a bee brainstem where you need that type of precision. We're talking about a human, for God's sakes. A quarter, if you put a quarter and a dime over a human heart or a human brain, they both fit. So it kind of came down to what was good enough. And so then you look at trade-offs, right? You look at pros and cons. If they shoot that good, then what's the trade-off? Why do I go with this? Well, the gas gun is lighter. The gas gun is more flexible, more capable, meaning I can use it in a close quarter battle scenario, right? Because I got a 20-round magazine, and it's semi-automatic, so I pull the trigger. Next round is in the chamber. So I don't need specialized weaponry. One gun can do a myriad of tasks. And Then it came again. It came to commonality, familiarization, because everybody's in that agency's familiar with gas gun operation. You don't have to specially train to a bolt gun. You don't have the slow reading, the slow rate of fire like a bolt gun does. And I mean, it came down to gas gun was good enough. And so they did a big change. I mean, they switched out and started going to gas guns. Vice bolt guns. So that's the biggest, like, I see that story and I'm happy that we didn't go and choose a bolt gun. You know, and you got your purists out there, you know, Kinney and those guys that believe what they believe.
Right.
And what they believe is wrong, but that's okay. But, you know, those guys will tell you, oh, a 30-06 bolt gun. You know, and you're like, oh, you know, just go away. You know, it's like telling me that a 65 Impala is the best car ever made.
Right.
You know, in 1965, yes.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I've ever, you and I've ever watched it, but there's great video of a head-on collision between two Impalas. One is built in like 1961 or two, and another one is a new one. And you would think, given the size of
the steel construction.
The newer car enters the passenger compartment of the older car. You would think it would bounce off. The passenger compartment of the newer car stays intact. Airbags deploy, right? The dummies in there, you know, they measure their vitals and impact and all that. You watch, and they have cameras on the inside, and you see this thing just come crushing into the engine, into the passenger compartment, you know, through kind of like the half. They don't hit head on, they offset by about a quarter of the vehicle. So they go half of each vehicle overlaps, and they collide like that. And
I've seen a study like that where they were talking about dissipation of force, of velocity. The newer cars dissipate that shock throughout the whole body of the car. You know, whereas the older cars that stayed in one centralized location. So your argument for the older cars are you don't have to replace the whole damn car in an accident. You just replace that part. Whereas the new cars, yeah, when they take a hit like that, there's a lot more damage to the car. But when you look at the compartment where the passenger rides, there has never been a case where the older car outperformed the newer car. And it came to actual damage, you know, like what you exerted in G forces, you know, inside the passenger compartment of the car. The newer cars always outperform the older cars in every capacity. So again, you look at trade-offs. Okay, so a 61 Impala to a new Impala, the gas mileage of a 61 Impala is ridiculous. The part replacement. So if you lose a taillight, you know, you're spending $300 to find the original one, vice going to AutoZone and ordering the part for $15. You know, so yeah, the trade-offs. I mean, why would you go with the older model, or just that because the older models were made? You know, they're like whatever. They're made better. Okay, hold on to that. So, I mean, it's, like I said, the same argument I get with people. Right. I had a guy call me, a friend of mine said, hey, call this guy. So he calls me up and goes, hey, I'm looking for a scope for my rifle. I said, what do you got? He goes, I got a bolt gun, Remington 700, which is the frame. And I said, what caliber is? And he said, 30-06. And I said, okay, what are you going to use it for? Deer. Okay. And elk. All right. So what scope should I get? And I told him, you know, so, with that gun, I just buy a very inexpensive gold metal Leopold duplex sight. He goes, what if I want to shoot long range? And I said, oh, you want to shoot long range? Oh, said, here's what you do. Get on the internet and buy a whole new barrel and bolt receiver group in 260 Remington or 300 Win Mag or something. But keep the stock because that's still good. It's still viable. And then just replace everything inside of it. He's like, what do you mean? I said, 30-06 is a crappy cartridge.
What?
No.
Blasphemy.
Yeah, my grandpa hunted with a 38-6.
That's the one that won. Yeah. That's the one that won the big one.
Yeah. Like, okay. Welcome to the new world. You know?
The Nina.
Step into the future.
And the Santa Maria. What do you mean?
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, then why? Yeah. Why did you go out and buy a 2017 boat? Why don't you just go buy a
rowboat,
a freaking wooden sailing boat?
Yeah. Hey, let's not go there. Let's not get stupid about it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's different.
I mean, technology and things change with it. Embrace it. You know, you don't see people. How many people do you know that actually have phones in their house? They have the cord still and the dial rotaries.
Well, you know, Mike and I had a conversation last week, and here's to me what's bothersome about this, and is that, I mean, when you talk about this stuff, people get upset, right? And rather than have a footnoted discussion, you know, there are people that make it personal. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And so that's, to me, what's troublesome.
Well, when I get in these conversations that people defend the 45 or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, and I like 45s. I got a 45. But when they defend it, and I say, give me five good things about the – what do you like about it? They come up with two pretty quick. One of the two is usually stupid, like firepower. Or knockdown power. So we talk about that, and then they feel kind of, okay, ridiculous after that comment. So they take that one back. But when they give me, like, we have real conversations, and they give me reliability. Really? Reliability for what? The range? Yes, you're right. That gun will always perform coming out of your range bag, going on the bench, being loaded, and shooting at paper targets. Once that gun goes dirty, though, once that gun gets, you know, environmental conditions happening to it, then it's assed out. Then forget about it. How long can you keep your magazines loaded? Oh, I have to download them, you know, if I'm not using it. Why? Well, because it doesn't cycle. Oh, okay. You know how long I keep my Glock magazines loaded? No. One of them I've had, it's probably been loaded 8 years.
Wait a minute, you're going to metal fatigue on the spring. What are you talking about?
Just the way the magazines are designed. So they have a more open – when you have a narrow – so when you take a spring out of a magazine,
yes,
narrow magazines, so single stack, which are most 45s, right?
Yes, sir.
So that's called a racetrack design spring. That's a racetrack spring.
Yes, for obvious reasons, right?
Yeah, it's a long oval. When that is very narrow, so the weak points on that spring are at the very top and the bottom of the oval, the corners, turn one and turn two, turn three and turn four, right? Those are the weak points. When those weak points are very narrow, the stress that's induced on those springs complicates a lot of things, and the metal becomes very fatigued very fast. When that spring is opened wider, so on double stack magazines, you have now more resiliency in that spring because those corners aren't as close together. You have space in between them. So you have more metal in there, more something to take that tension off. So single stack magazines will fail more than a double stack. And if you can get newer magazines that what they call circular springs.
Yeah.
So what they do in really nice, expensive magazines is there's two set springs. And there's two springs that are basically round coils. So if you get a round coil spring, there's no turns. It's a complete round circle. So the tension is of that spring when it's compressed is evenly dispersed throughout that whole metal spring. Whereas in a racetrack spring, when you compress it, they're in the turns. All that tension is in the turns. So it's in a very small area on a spring. But when you get magazines that actually have two circular springs, two round, complete round, and when I say two, because you have to have two, otherwise you get this tilt the tilt follower will go one way or the other. But if you can get two that in there, then it'll evenly disperse. You'll get better feeding of the weapon, because that's what it comes down to, right? You can have a $10,000 pistol, but if you got a shit magazine, you got a shit gun, because it's not going to feed. It needs ammunition to shoot. And if your magazine is not feeding it the ammunition, then it's going to go, you know, when you need it most, it's going to fail on you. So that's why I tell people, why would you spend $6,000 on this gun and then buy a cheap-ass magazine? Are you stupid? That's like buying a Ferrari or Lamborghini and then going to Big O Tires and getting the stuff that's on sale. Why are the tires for a Ferrari so expensive? Because the performance of the car, when you're taking turns and you're doing these things and you're really getting what that car can do, if you got shit tires, as soon as you go on there, that tread's going to come right off, your teal tires come off, and you're dead. You know, that's why they cost so much, because they're all evenly dispersed throughout the whole car. The performance of the car is not just one thing. It's everything. It's the oil. It's the gas. It's the spark plugs. It's the tires. It's the brake calipers. You know, it's everything. That's why everything costs so much. Same thing with a gun. It's your sling. It's your ammunition. It's your barrel. It's your, you know, it's all the components that make up the gun. It's not just what I got. Shit hot gun. Why? Because I got a shit hot barrel in it. What about everything else? Oh, it's stock. You got a stock gun. You got a shit trigger, shit magazine, shit optics. You got a shit gun. But I spent, you know, $600 on a barrel. Okay. You got a $600 barrel. That's it. It's all of those components. It's a system. And that's why when you buy guns like the Army did, that HK, the whole goddamn gun is good. That's why they're good. A lot of civilian manufacturers that do government programs, it's only one component that is more reliable. So, you know, you got good barrels. Colt makes really good barrels. Everything else, you know, people are known. Geissele makes good triggers. Geissele doesn't make guns. They make great triggers. But when you put all that shit together and you spend, you know, $600 on a trigger, $1,000 on a barrel, you know, all this stuff, you got a $4,500 gun, just go buy an HK. Done. Don't have to do it. Don't have to put all that shit together and put it all together. So, yeah, that's why I'm excited, the Army. That's a good choice. So it's going to open up things.
All right.
And there probably is guns that are out there that can perform just like an HK, but they can't manufacture. They don't have the manufacturing force behind like HK does. They can't put them out in those numbers.
Interesting. All right, what else you got going on today?
Not much today. Finishing up some books, reading. Got the interview today.
I told Patrick to Patrick's driving through Texas today.
Where at?
I told him, I said, you should, but the way he's got to be in New Orleans tomorrow. So he stopped in El Paso last night.
Oh, and he's wasted. Yeah, he's going to cut 10.
Right.
He's going to take 10 all the way across. Right. That's like.
So I told him, I said, hey, you should go by and see Mike. And he's like, he said, he's meeting his girl. I mean, he's starting, you know, pretty exciting for Patrick, right? He's getting out of the Marine Corps and he's starting the next chapter of his life. And, girl's flying to meet him in New Orleans. They're driving back to DC where we're going to start life together. So yeah, pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. For him to go out of his way, just right. When he's just that point to go out of his way, it's 4.5 hours.
Yeah. And that's, yeah.
Unless he takes the 20, if he takes the 20 up through Midland and Odessa and then comes in, that's 45 minutes out of his way.
Yeah.
But then he's got to drop all the way back down again once he's on the 20.
Yeah. Which is a bit of distance. So anyway, and the last thing he doesn't want his girl to fly in and him be late or anything like that. I'm like, come on, man, relax. And that's really going to happen. He said, stop it. He said, I know how you work. He said, I know how you work. So anyway. All right. I will sync up with you in about 50 minutes, right?
Well, let's see. It's 2 o'clock. No, it's 1 o'clock. So we got another
hour.
2 hours.
Okay. All right. All right.
So 3 o'clock his time, which is 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock my time.
Yeah, noon my
your
time.
Time.
Right. All right. We'll sync up before that. And
all right, sounds good.
All right, there you have it, Michael Musselman. Thanks. There you have it, the man, the myth, the legend himself. On a Monday that doesn't feel like a Monday for some reason. So anyway, we're gonna get out of here, and we got stuff to do. All right, if you just interesting show today, Gunnar Waxenlicher about weapons. So you'll hear that. And you'll hear a discussion about President's Day. Today is the day that we remember Presidents Lincoln and Washington, who were huge in the development of this country. So you'll hear about that. And then you'll hear from Alex Hollings, who's moving. And we talk about truth in the way our government operates, truth in the media. And does it seem like that's becoming a more and more elusive commodity? And that you see the line that the truth, has it ever been the truth? You know, you get that. And so we'll talk about that a little bit. Alex in the midst of moving. So we'll talk. You'll hear about that. And then the Gunner talks about guns. So have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio over and out.